was horrifying. And I'm sure that I'm going to be horrified many more times to hear the Israeli official try to absolve himself of responsibility by saying, you know, boy, if there was an organization, an institution, if there was somebody that we could turn to find out what was motivating these terrorists, what they believed, then we might be able to predict their actions. But when it's just two brothers, they don't seem associated with anything, and they just act on their own, well, that's really hard to prevent. Well, you know, so long as that's the kind of stupidity that's going to come out of the official mouths of the administrators in Israel, then you better really get accustomed to the sight of blood. I don't know how many of you have actually seen the videos of the scene that took place where those two Muslims with a pistol and with a meat cleaver went into that synagogue and started hacking people to death. It's gruesome. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's real video. The blood is everywhere. It is absolutely gruesome. It is the antithesis of these sanitized videos that are allegedly being put out by the Islamic State are showcasing non-beheadings. This stuff will make your stomach turn. Blood everywhere. But let me tell you something, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir as it relates to our audience. What those two Muslim boys did was predictable. They aren't independent. They did not act on their own. They were motivated by Islam. This is the example of Muhammad that they're following. Muhammad bludgeoned Jews. He told Muslims that when they kill Jews, they get bonus points in heaven, and that the Jew killer is given more benefits, more rewards in Allah's paradise than someone who dies killing another form of infidel. Muhammad, one day in Yathrib, towards the very end of his life, killed between 600 and 900 Jewish men and boys, cutting off their heads, a scene even bloodier than we witnessed in the synagogue. He knew these individuals. They had sold him Talmud readings in the past. Muhammad then raped their wives, their sisters, their mothers, and then he sold the children into slavery. That's the nature of Muhammad, the nature of Islam. That was the motivation, the sole motivation for those murders in the Jerusalem synagogue. So, pal, if you can't figure it out, if you can't make the connection, then you ought to resign. There was a newscast, even my wife reacted to this morning, NBC, turned away from the Today Show to do a report on the synagogue massacre, and the conclusion of the report was that slowly this conflict is taking on a religious overtone as opposed to a political one. It is becoming more religious than political. Oh, come on. Even my wife laughed and said, are you an idiot or what? The behavior of Muslims in Israel has never been politically motivated. There's no political aspect to it at all. It's always been religion. It has always been Muslims against Jews. It's never been Jews against Muslims, ever. The Muslims have been the perpetrators. They've been the perpetrators because of their religion. That's what the Quran encourages of them. It's what the Hadith says they should do. It is Muhammad's example. The fact is that the Quran is a more anti-Semitic book. It is a more violent book than was Hitler's Mein Kampf. Wake up. This story is about the Islamic State. It says the militant group Islamic State is committing war crimes and imposing a rule of terror in areas it controls in Syria. And why should we be surprised? One of Muhammad's most famous lines was, "I have been made victorious with terror." Islam is a terrorist manifesto. Muhammad terrorized everyone who did not capitulate. If you did not capitulate to Islam, surrender to Islam, forfeit your life and soul to Muhammad and his wannabe God, you were terrorized. The report, based on more than 300 witnesses and interviews, said the Islamic State was using extreme violence against civilians. Well, that's what terror is. The reason that terror is deployed is because there are times where a conventional force is inadequate in controlling a population. And by the way, that's the norm. If you look at the Roman Empire, they had by far the most effective military, and they were more prone to use terror than we are today. You look at Islam's rise in influence, and it has always used terror. Never an exception. And if you look at the mightiest military power of the day, the United States, no country in existence today has used terror more effectively than America. Terror is when armed individuals attack civilians who are typically unarmed for the purpose of using the fear of additional and violent, sadistic, and brutal assaults to get the population to acquiesce, to surrender to the goals, the control of those perpetrating the acts of terror. One of the great examples of terrorism in America was Sherman's March to the Sea. Lincoln recognized that he could not defeat the South militarily and occupy the South, and you'd have to do both, militarily occupy the South and defeat it militarily, if you were going to force the South back into union with the North. And he knew it was impossible. So what did he do? He deployed terrorism. He had Sherman terrorize the South into submission. If you look at World War II, the United States, even with Germany distracted off there fighting the Russians, did not have the wherewithal to defeat the German military mano a mano. In particular, their tanks and their artillery and the training of their infantry was substantially superior to American tanks, artillery, training. And so what America did is we began our assault on the Germans as terrorists. We firebombed German cities. In fact, we actually told the Germans that we're going to perpetrate this war as a terrorist act. We told the Germans, we leafleted to them as we bombed and firebombed their cities, murdering defenseless civilians by the tens of thousands. We told them that we're going to continue to bomb cities so that the war becomes unsustainable for the Germans. Not because we're taking out their ability to produce weapons. No. Not because we're winning battles against their troops. No. Because we're firebombing their mothers, their fathers, their wives, and their children, burning them alive, burying them in rubble.
That's not terrorism. That's the doctrine of total war.
No, that's terrorism.
When they shifted from militaries on battlefields and military targets to targeting civilian populations, they called it the doctrine of total war, but it is effectively terrorism.
It's terrorism incorporated into an overall strategy of war. Mm-hmm. The same thing was true with Japan in the Pacific theater of World War II. We got lucky in the Battle of the Coral Sea. We got lucky because the Japanese had better ships, better planes. Their troops were better trained. And so when we went mano a mano with the Japanese, unless we got lucky, we typically lost. And so what happened was that the Americans decided we need to come up with a way we can terrorize the Japanese into submission. And Americans were willing to sacrifice the lives of tens of thousands of American troops fighting for muddy patches of ground in the middle of the Pacific so that we could move our bombers ever closer to Japan, not so that we could bomb Japan's harbors and so they couldn't make ship, not so we could bomb their aircraft manufacturing plants, because that's not what we did. We moved our runways closer and closer to Japan so that we could use white sulfur, white phosphorus, so that we could firebomb Japanese civilians who were unarmed. And we did. Night after night, killing anywhere from 10 to 50,000 a night as terrorists to make war unsustainable for the Japanese. That was our strategy. So, extreme violence, burning women and children and the elderly alive, is an act of terrorism. Well, I can't tell if it's just me or if that's played for everybody, but the music was having the trumpeter in the Exodus song was having a tough time there. There's lots of conclusions, I guess, one could draw from the information, but my conclusions were twofold as to why Muhammad chose terror. And make no mistake, Muhammad never engaged in a single military battle. Muhammad never fought an army. He never even fought armed opponents. 100% of Muhammad's 75 raids were on civilians, defenseless civilians. So the question is, why then is terrorism the principal tactic of Islam? Why did Muhammad say that he has become victorious with terror? Why is the Quran filled with terrorist acts? Why are Muslims today terrorists? And I think that in 7th century Arabia, when Muhammad began his reign of terror, there were two things that caused Muhammad to be a terrorist as opposed to a warrior. Now, you can't ever make the claim that Muhammad was a general and that he led an army again and was successful as a army leader against other armies. He was not a general. He never had an army, and he never fought a military, ever. So it was always Muhammad deploying armed civilians to attack unarmed civilians. Now, one of the reasons I think this is the case is that Islam grew up in Arabia. There were no armies in Arabia. There wasn't a single military in Arabia. Arabia was an extraordinarily impoverished place. It still is, really. And so there were no militaries. So there, people were traders. You know, there really weren't any, wasn't any agriculture. There weren't farmers. The people there were almost universally traders. And it was tough enough to survive. You couldn't support a military. What were you going to do with one? You know, you're traitors. You know, there isn't a single military around that's going to come into Arabia to rob them because there's not enough there. And you have to cross way too much desert to get there. And even once you get there, there's nothing that a civilization would want to steal. So the Egyptians didn't attack them. The Persians didn't attack them. The Byzantines didn't attack them. The Greeks didn't attack them. No one went there. And so there was no reason to have a military to defend oneself. And if you're into just barely surviving, then you don't have the wherewithal to be a conqueror. So they didn't have a military to project their influence. So there wasn't a single military. So when Muhammad decided that he was going to use force to impose his will, the only victims of that blunt trauma would be civilians. There would never be anyone other than civilians. So when you use blunt force against civilians, it's terrorism. So that was the only way to apply blunt force trauma in 7th century Arabia. So that's why all of Muhammad's raids, all of his militant activity, all of his jihadist activity was terrorism. It was 100% perpetrated against civilians. The first terrorist raid was Badr, chronicled in the 8th surah of the Quran. Muhammad raided a civilian caravan for the express purpose of stealing their possessions. He murdered many of the men. He mutilated their bodies. He stayed there overnight to gloat at their mutilated bodies, gloat over their mutilated bodies. He kidnapped some of the men, sold them as ransom, stole all of their possessions. It was a terrorist raid. And there were 74 more of them over the first 10 years of the Islamic era. So I think that's half the reason. I think the other half of the reason is Muhammad wanted the objective that terrorism delivers. He wasn't trying to conquer land. He wanted people to submit to him and to his wannabe God. Islam means submission, after all. Terrorism is the perfect tool for submission. Winter. So Islam today is responsible for 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts. Now, if you'd gone back 60-some-odd years ago, and you were dealing with the United States and the world as it existed when the U.S. decided to engage in the World War, America was responsible for the vast preponderance of terrorist acts. Today, it is Islam. Now, I don't think America ever had the 99.9% monopoly on terror that Islam has today, but nonetheless, America was the leading terrorist nation on earth, and now that mantle has been passed to Islam. But if you want to know why Islam motivates terror, why 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts are associated today with Islam, why it is the best Muslims that are the most prevalent terrorists, it's because Muhammad was a terrorist. And he was a terrorist for two reasons. One is he was unable to achieve his desires through words. his words were stupid. They still are. The Quran is the dumbest book ever uttered. And so he was ineffective with his words. He could not perform any miracles. So the only way that he had to get people to acquiesce to him, to submit to him, to surrender to him, was blunt force. And since there were no police, no militaries, not even any militias within camel ride of Mecca and Medina, Muhammad achieved his goals by inflicting terror on defenseless civilians. So since the religion is based entirely on Muhammad's words and deeds, today's Muslims, the Islamic State, are perpetrating extreme violence against civilians, and therefore they're imposing a rule of terror. That is the nature of things. Second, Muhammad only wanted one thing. He wants the exact same thing that today's terrorists want. They want the entire world to submit to Muhammad and to his wannabe God. Submission. Islam means submission in Arabic. That's what they're striving for now. It's what they were striving for then. When you want people to surrender to you, when you want them to submit, the most effective way is terrorism. How did America get the Japanese to surrender unconditionally in World War II? We bombed two civilian communities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Nothing military about either target. They were civilian communities. We terrorized the Japanese into surrender. How did Abraham Lincoln get the South to submit to Northern authority? Terrorized them into submission. Sherman marched to the sea. It is what people do if what they want is capitulation. If they want surrender, that's what they do. They use terrorism. You know, if you look at the Romans, the mightiest military, the military that and nation that America emulates, when they went into the province of Judah, they were attempting to get the Jews to surrender to Roman authority, to Roman taxation, to Roman laws, to Roman rule, they terrorized anyone who would oppose them. And their form of terror was crucifixion. Public crucifixions were horrific. That was their form of terror. That's how they stopped, for example, the Spartacus revolt. They crucified every slave they could catch. And in the first revolt, tens of thousands of Jews were crucified. Those who were not crucified were hauled off brutally as slaves and used to construct the Colosseum in Rome. And that was child's play compared to the second assault against Rome perpetrated by Jews in the province of Yehuda, not in 70 CE, but now in 133 to 135. The Romans found that they were unable to bludgeon the Jews to death using military means. As a matter of fact, when they went mano a mano, militias against the Roman legions got butchered. There are two of the three initial legions that were brought against the Romans that were disbanded after the uprising because the Jewish militias absolutely annihilated them. And so the Romans could not beat the Jews using traditional armies. So they terrorized them. They took every Jewish community and they surrounded it. And they starved the people to death, and they constantly harassed them. And anyone who would try to escape, they crucified in such a way that their tormented and screaming bodies were on display to those inside of the city, saying, "This is the fate that awaits you." And they tortured them to death. Ultimately, those in the city had no weapons, and the Romans just brutalized them. Total surrender, total submission. That's why terrorism is used. So, as we read this article further on the Islamic State using this tactic, men caught smoking have their fingers amputated, while a female dentist who treated men was publicly beheaded. The group has seized large parts of Syria and Iraq, as we know. In addition to interviews with men, women and children who had fled are living or have lived in Islamic State-held area of Syria were examined primarily through photographs. The public executions by the group are so common that bodies frequently are left on public display as a warning to local residents: do not display any non-Islamic behavior. It added that the international community had underestimated the threat of the group, and that the failure to find a political solution to the Syrian crisis had left a deadly and dangerous vacuum that was filled by the Islamic State. There was never a political solution to the Syrian problem. It was always a religious problem. The war in Syria began because the United States invaded Iraq, deposed Saddam Hussein, who was an enemy of Iran and an ally of the United States, and they gave Iraq to Iran, which expanded Iranian power more than just by giving them Iraq, but by removing their only enemy. And then Syria, which had been an ally of Iraq, became a client of Iran, expanding further Iranian influence. And then Iran, through Hezbollah, took over Lebanon. And they began to have huge influence over the Egyptian government, over Libya, over Hamas, and on it went. So the Saudi Arabians and the, in particular, but also the Kuwaitis and the Qataris and the Turks, all began to shake in their boots and say, "What has America done? Look at the influence now of Iran." And they don't look at it as the influence of Iran. They never, ever consider this a political issue. It was always, look at what America has done to empower Shia Islam. And they're Sunnis. So they had a conniption fit. So the situation in Iraq became a proxy war. It became Saudi Arabia and Turkeys and Kuwaits and Qatars quest to undo, to deflate Shia Islam, to undo the gains that they had made in influence. And so that was not a political issue. It was a religious issue. Sunni versus Shia Islam. That's what began the war in Syria. It has continued that way. The jihadists that have engaged in fighting the Assad regime have been resolutely Sunni Muslims, and they all speak of the Shias as infidels whom they are going to kill so that they can establish a unified Islam all under Shias. It's always been a religious war. It's still a religious war. Every one of the belligerents is a fundamentalist Muslim, either Sunni or Shia. So this notion that there was a political solution that was filled by the group is utter nonsense. Or a lack of a political solution that was, the vacuum was filled by the group. It has always been a religious conflict. There is no political solution. there is no religious solution. Because the belligerents here are the two flavors of Islam. There was a news report on television last night. Somebody from, I think it was NBC, a woman, was in interviewing somebody from the Saudi royal family. And she says, you know, there's a lot of people that blame the Saudis for the rise in fundamentalist Islamic terrorism. And this is because, you know, of your strain of Islam here, they say, you know, inspired terrorism. And this person, she didn't even know what flavor of Islam that was. It's Wahhab. Didn't know how that had occurred. It's because the Saud family were chieftains, they were warlords, and they came up with this notion that since the most outspoken Islamic cleric of the day was Wahhab, that if they could unite, if they could be warlord and imam, that they would have much more influence against the other warlords that they were fighting against in Arabia, and that the combination of terror and Islam would prevail. And it did. The report produced by the United Nations claims that the Islamic State fighters are blocking supplies of food and aid and medicines from reaching local populations. Actually, they're distributing the food. The aid that is being provided, the medicines, they're just providing it to those that they want to give it to. That's really been true throughout human history. Whether it be medicines or foods, they're always allocated by those in control. So the Islamic State's not doing anything different there. They are raping, stoning, and torturing civilians. Islam is worse when it comes to rape than any other religion. And that really is because of the nature of its founder. Muhammad was a sexual pervert. And because Muhammad was a sexual pervert, he was a serial rapist. And as a serial rapist, since the religion is based entirely on him, rape is condoned in the Quran. And so Islam is worse at rape than other belligerents. As for stoning and torturing of civilians, I'm not sure that Islam is worse than others. When you look at what the Roman Catholic Church did during the time that it held sway over Europe, I mean, you could not have had anyone more effective at torture. In fact, I would be willing to say, in all of human history, the institution that most perfected torture as a means to control through excruciating pain was the Roman Catholic Church. And if you don't think so, take a tour through Europe sometime and go through the torture museums in Europe and realize that virtually all of the implements were developed by the Roman Catholic Church. They were virtually all deployed by the Roman Catholic Church, and they are horrific. They are so much worse than what you see Muslims using. For the most part, Muslims use rubber hoses that they beat the soles of feet, and they will occasionally pull out fingernails. I mean, they do some pretty gruesome stuff. They use cattle prods. They use electric shock. Oh, but the level that the Roman Catholic Church took slow, agonizing pain perpetrated by their priests and their dungeons, strictly to have absolute control, total submission of the population out of fear. I think the Roman Catholic Churches would be the worst in human history as it relates to torture. The sexual enslavement of minority women, including forcing them to bear children on behalf of Islamic State fighters, that would be worse in Islam than it would be in other cultures, although the Romans were particularly had a proclivity, I should say, to do this. So, yeah, Romans did it. Other cultures have done it. But in terms of men owning and controlling women, the religion of Islam is the worst doctrine man has ever conceived. In the entirety of human existence, mankind has, there is no doctrine, no religion, no political system conceived by mankind that is more belligerent towards women, that's more aggressive towards women, that is more demeaning to women than Islam. So when it comes to raping women, abusing women, the sexual enslavement of women, depriving women of all rights, then Islam is by itself. It is the worst religion in human history in terms of degrading and abusing women. The use of child soldiers is the next thing on the UN list. There's relatively little of that in the Islamic State. They just haven't had the need to. Worse, child soldiers are a real problem is with Boko Haram. But the Islamic State, they've got plenty of recruits that are in their teens and in their 20s. The gathering of children for screening videos and showings of mass executions, oh, this is common with Islam and has always been. They are proud of what they do. And so as they perpetrate these horrible acts, they not only draw large crowds, including children around them, but they film them. It's an integral part of the religion. It's depraved.